Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J Jeff here.
And this is Rick Swan.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
I'm Rocco Cinco Romero.
David Starr.
Support WrestleTalk.
You are watching WrestleTalk.
Congratulations, you got here. Now, subscribe and support
WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk and please subscribe now.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it.
Support Ollie. Support me. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Because we talk about wrestling, and I like it.
Support WrestleTalk.
And don't subscribe.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is, and whoever Luke Owen is, both the Ravens. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Now and live.
The Fiend is finally the WWE Universal Champion. I'm Ollie Davis. This is El Fakeador Laurie Blake. Please press the thumbs up button. Give us a subscribe. Get your super chats in. Don't worry if you left a super chat on the other stream. We've got them saved. We're going to be answering them at the end of this first discussion point and all the others right at the end of the stream. Yes, so Crown Jewel 2019. Mm-hmm. Just to go through the headlines of what we've already said to nobody in an empty void is it's... Headline-wise, The Fiend is the Universal Champion. Great. Mm-hmm. That's really, really exciting. Women wrestled a match in Saudi Arabia. That's also very, like, that's very undeniably historic and momentous. Other than that, I personally felt the rest of the show was either tedious because mm-hmm. the crowd weren't really into it, although this is one of the better crowds that have been for a Saudi Arabia show. I still thought it lacked a lot of atmosphere, particularly for the tag match and the Styles Carrillo match.
People got bored very quickly.
And a lot of the main event, to be honest. And it ranged from tedious to very frustrating because I didn't like the Lesnar-Velasquez stuff and I thought the Fury-Strowman stuff was ineffectively booked and it exposed all of Fury's flaws of not being a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
I thought the Fiend-Rollins match was way too long. I don't like the red light stuff.
Roxanne. Yeah, no, I think I agree with all those points. I think the problem with the show is that it's just, you could have just done like it's a birthday party. It's a big sort of weird celebration that's being booked for somebody very specific and to their taste. So why not go the extra mile with that? Why is AJ facing off against Humberto Carrillo as if like we're carrying on a bit of story for Raw? Because do you know what? We've gone to Saudi Arabia, so we might as well try and get some sort of TV story going. This is the time to throw all that out of the window and just do dream matches. Like, you could have just done Shinsuke versus AJ again. People were so into Shinsuke Nakamura when he came out. You could have just gone, well, we're just going to have a Shinsuke AJ match as a sort of champion versus champion thing. That'll be a laugh. There's so many permutations of the current roster that you could have just chucked into the ring together and done an amazing match. It didn't have to be massive tag battle, random singles match with people that you're trying to like put over for the rest of the story. Because while I might care about Humberto Carrillo becoming a big deal on Raw, because I've been watching him since he was in like NXT on 205 and now on Raw, I'm like, okay, I'm quite interested. People in Saudi Arabia seemingly didn't care or know who he was. So you're not doing anyone any favours there. You're just watching, people are just rooting for AJ to win. And you're doing all this work to be like, oh, he's a babyface in peril. And people are just going like, yeah, kill him, AJ! Kill him!
It was the same deal with Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez. Everyone was cheering Brock like he was an uber babyface. And they, well, they were never really given a reason to get into Velasquez.
Yeah.
I think a lot of, it was weird though, because we finished the our live reactions. We were pretty down on it, apart from the sort of headline news that came out of it.
The saving graces.
Yeah, and a lot of people in the chat in the live reactions, not everybody, but most people, I would argue, were also very down on it, like saying it was a bad show. But then, like, reading around and seeing other people's reactions, a lot of people were, I think, so enamored by The Fiend becoming the Universal Champion. And I think that, so having two titles, the two top titles on SmackDown now, plus the announcement that NXT is going to factor into Survivor Series, where it's going to be Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT, it creates a very interesting landscape for the immediate next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So while the actual experience of watching Crown Jewel was pretty monotonous, it has set up a really, really potentially exciting November in WWE. So that's my sort of armchair psychology reasoning for why so many people were into this.
I think you could watch the last 30 seconds and you get all of the nourishment that you needed from this show.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all you need to take away. Is the rest of it was either lethargic wrestling or fairly good, but too lethargic crowd.
Yeah.
And that was, I think that was the big thing. It was like, either the wrestlers weren't into it or the crowd wasn't into it, and neither the two sort of lined up with, like, both people are into it at any real point in this whole thing.
It did on one occasion,
yeah,
and that was Cesaro versus Mansoor, which was terrific.
Yeah.
The whole crowd were into it. Mansoor and Cesaro worked an excellent match, which, you know, I think is mostly Cesaro because he's an absolute pro, but Mansoor has so much charisma.
Yeah.
He's really athletic. He was so over because this is his home country. And, like, surely off the back of that, Mansoor's got to get a bit of a push in WWE.
You'd think so, unless they're just going to trot him out every 6 months to have
his
own personal WrestleMania moment in Saudi Arabia, and then he goes back in the cupboard for a bit, and then they'll be like, oh, we'll get him out again because we're going back to Saudi.
I think that kind of encapsulates why maybe I'm not as excited as the people who really like the show, because for every good thing that I can see, I've been taught by, like, 5 years of WWE booking that they're not going to deliver on it, or they're going to screw it up, or Mansoor's not going to be around for 6 months. So I guess, like, I'm so harmed by everything that WWE have done recently that it's almost too little too late for me. Whereas I guess a lot of other people are just more excited about the future.
Yeah, I think that is a big takeaway here, is that the end goal of Crown Jewel, like what we came out of there with, what is an exciting future for WWE with The Fiend being Universal Champion. But that's because Crown Jewel's finished. And that's you shouldn't be sitting there at the end of the pay-per-view being like, oh, thank God that's over. Because, you know, like, the things that they were building to at Crown Jewel, like the really big things, were flubs at the event. Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar was a bit of a botch. Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman was a lot of a botch. And The Fiend versus Seth Rollins was basically a play-by-play almost of Hell in a Cell that you couldn't really see, and then quite a cool finish. And the finish is important because it changes the landscape of WWE and makes it all feel exciting. But why did we sort of, and I said this in the highlights and lowlights video I did yesterday, why have we sacrificed all of this stuff that was going on before? All these big exciting moments in recent WWE history, like going live on Fox and all that stuff. Like, we've sacrificed that to the build for Crown Jewel. And we thought that was kind of, you know, I think me and Pete, when we were watching SmackDown doing the live reactions for that, were a bit like, it's kind of weird booking that Cain Velasquez has come out and this has happened and stuff. But I can see them building to this idea of SmackDown being a cross-sports brand. But then it turns out, no, it was just for this birthday party they've got coming up. So, you know, it just feels like everything at Crown Jewel has been very carefully constructed to please somebody. And it didn't necessarily do that. In some places it did. In Natty versus Lacey Evans, the crowd were very into that, and that, like, hit all the right notes of, you know, we're trying to generate this emotion, and it did. Same with the Mansoor thing, and then everything else didn't quite generate that. So they don't know necessarily what their audience is over there either. But then they've spent time trying to tell everyone else who is their regular audience that that's going to be important in the lead up to the event.
They've, in trying to serve so many masters, they've served
Nobody. Very few. Yeah, they just it's just made WWE feel like it's there's no actual like trajectory for any of the storyline.
So let's talk about The Fiend versus Seth Rollins because that is, you know, that's I know from a I struggle to really enjoy the whole women's stuff just because there's so much cynicism involved in that. But the Fiend being a universal champion in my little kayfabe wrestling world, I'm very excited about.
Yes.
But to get there again, it was a long match. It was a long match that had the red light in again, which you said you quite liked. And it was a pretty much 50-50 split in the live chats when we were doing the reactions as well. So, you know, that there's that line there. But Dave Meltzer said that people were contacting, like ringing into the Wrestling Observer and saying a lot of people left at that point because they'd seen Hogan and Flair, and that's what most of the people were there for.
Yeah.
Like for the Saudi market, the big draws were Velasquez, Fury, Hogan and Flair.
Yeah.
Hogan and Flair was the semi-main, so apparently a lot of people left after that. And when the red lighting came on, because people couldn't see the action, they followed along most of it on the big screen. A lot of people left there as well.
Yeah.
And you can kind of hear that because listen to the crowd reactions. It's all quite high-pitched, which indicates kids stayed around, which is strange because it's like such a horrific gimmick.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. But that, it lost a lot of the crowd, literally, for that main event. And I think it, because it was hard to see, because it was quite plodding, it was, like you said, the same match as Hell in a Cell, just without this. Instead of being contained, it was
around. Well, they just changed the ending. It's not. That's kind of what it feels like. I know there were different, there was slightly different stuff, but it's done. Weirdly, it's done more to harm Seth Rollins having these two matches, I think, than if you had just squashed him in Hell in a Cell.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Like, we were hypothesizing on the live stream yesterday and saying, like, what would be a cool way to have done Hell in a Cell? And you could have done Seth locked in there with a monster and the monster's stopping anyone from getting in there to help Seth, including the referee, etc. So that, like, you could have opened that match with The Fiend locking himself in, taking the key, and then he's in there with Seth, and he's just terrorizing Seth in this cell. And then
it truly is hell in a cell.
Then you can literally have the locker room run down and try and break in. People are trying to cut down the cell stuff.
Remember that for fantasy booking.
and then he pins Seth and wins the Universal Championship. That doesn't even have to happen. But something has to happen that's quite big there. And instead they just went with what they thought they were right to do. Doubled down on it here by doing the same match and then just changed the ending, being like, well, I gave you what you want.
I think that said it. It's a make good because it was so similar. It had all the stuff of Fiend getting up after chair shots. The sledgehammer came into play. There were eight stomps in total that the Fiend would no sell and then slightly sell and then still get back up. It was all... The story of Seth going into that dark place wasn't there. But in a just pure physical spot basis, it was very similar. And the sort of cage spots were just replaced with being chucked around on those big platforms that supported the giant beams.
Yeah.
And the finish came when they sort of made their way up the ramp. There's a conveniently placed technical area that the Fiend is super kicked into. This lets loads of pyro go off.
I like this.
This was a good bit. And if we hadn't had the Hell in a Cell finish, I think I'd have really enjoyed this match, actually. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit where it was not just pyro, but there was a few flames that shot out. And I thought, oh, man, if we see, like, someone dummied up as the Fiend, which you can do because he's, you know, that sort of he's got that sort of dress, but they've got the proper fire costume on and he could walk out on fire.
Whoa.
That would be such a cool visual. They did do that. That's very, very dangerous. But
I'd be taking the burn it down thing too literally, wouldn't it?
But it would tie him very, very nicely from a narrative perspective. And then Seth Rollins goes down there, very ineffectively checks if Bray's still there.
Yeah, he drags out like a bit of... He drags out like a pelican case, doesn't he? And then he's like... Leans over to be like, oh, is anyone there? He's like, no, it's absolutely fine. And then the Fiend just stands up behind him.
It was when Seth removed a box that, for some reason, set off a bit of pyro. was a bit contrived, but I didn't really mind it.
Oh, that was it.
It.
And he was like, oh, I'm blinded.
So he's blinded and he turns round. And this was a really cool shot. So Seth's almost sat down. He can't see. And behind him, the Fiend rises from out of this death zone. I love bits like that. And it's been really, there's been a lot of moments like that in just the last year. Mm-hmm. It sort of started off with the Ospreay-Ibushi match where...
Oh, the flip out of
Ibushi, I think Hurricanrana's Ospreay off the top rope. Ibushi lands, but then Ospreay lands right behind him. And there's that brilliant moment where they both know that move was countered. So that was a really... And it was classic horror movie stuff.
Yeah.
The way they presented Fiend as a horror movie character in the vein of Jason is I thought it was very well done. It's just a shame that I'm almost over the Fiend off of the Hell in a Cell stuff was so damaging to me.
Yeah,
that it's a shame that I'm not more into this.
I just think I do really like the horror movie kind of booking of the character. I think that's really cool and it's a great idea. This is way too early to do this match,
mm-hmm.
is kind of how I felt about it. I felt like this is like the end of a very long feud or the end of like a long run of squashing people and being a monster. Because you don't start up, no horror movie starts with the final girl running away and getting away and then, you know, hitting them back and then they finally work out how to defeat them. It starts with... You're the first victim. You're the second victim. That was easy. You're the third victim. That was a little bit harder. You're the fourth victim. That was maybe a little bit harder. Fifth victim, they've started to work out. Sixth victim is the final girl. And they finally get sort of their comeuppance and get away or they get killed, whatever it is. But there's an arc to that. You don't just start at, he's an unstoppable monster. You can slow him down, but he just keeps on coming. It's like, it should be more of a sort of...
Slowly revealed.
Yeah, reveal that like... Even the person who dares to stand up to him can't do it.
Mm.
Whereas they went Finn Balor just got mullered. And then they were like, Finn Balor gets mullered. And then Seth Rollins is like kicking him around Hell in a Cell for ages. And he's just lying flat on the floor, which kind of ruins a bit of the mystique.
They've skipped the entire middle part of the story. Yeah. Or not story, that's the wrong word. But arc of the Fiend's first year.
Yeah,
like this should be a year from SummerSlam, or more appropriately, you know, it seems like a character so suited to Survivor Series.
Yeah,
when it's a bit more gothic and spooky.
They should have had the Kane and Brock spot, not at the beginning of the show, but they should have had the length that Kane and Brock had.
You like Brock's length, is what you're saying?
I'm saying I like Brock's length for this match.
The crowd didn't pop that much, I thought, for the finish. That seems to be because a lot of them left. Well, our reaction was kind of like, well, good.
Yeah.
we didn't go crazy because, well, I guess it's already been a bit deflated for us by the Hell in a Cell stuff.
I think the other thing is that it felt like it was the only choice to make.
Mm.
There's a bit of, it's not really a surprise because it felt like backtracking.
Yeah.
It felt like this is the only way to make good on the character and not ruin it. So you're going to have to put the belt on him. And then you sort of go, oh, okay, that's not surprising.
There was a weird bit after the win. So Fiend wins with Mandible Claw out of the pyro area and then Sister Abigail for the win. And then the lights cut out after a bit. And we were like, and it was for a while. I thought, Undertaker? And I was just waiting for the dong. But then it's the...
You're waiting for the dong.
And Brock's length.
Yeah, okay.
And it's the... And it's the flashing white lights on the Fiend for that horror movie exit. Which was a great visual. And it's my fault for thinking that it was Taker. But they'll need to establish that more. That's how... I mean, I guess they have done. But whenever the lights all cut out, I think Undertaker's going to appear.
Yeah. And I think because it was a positive moment, so it was like the Fiend, generally speaking, the lights go out and he attacks somebody from out of nowhere or at the end of a match or at the end of something he's already done.
Mm.
So he'll like do that and then he'll do something else as he's leaving. So it felt a bit, it was like, oh, okay, I thought we were sort of celebrating.
Yeah.
So it did feel kind of pregnant with the idea that something else might happen.
Yeah. But it is a positive. Very excited to see what the Fiend does now. Let's get to your super chats to see what you guys thought. Tim Arndt, when I first saw the image of the Fiend holding the Universal title high, my first thought was, I'll never need to go to Brazzers ever again. Just gonna... That's how erotic this image is for people.
Well, that's it. I would argue that there probably were quite a lot of people who didn't watch the show and saw the news and then watched the end. And then, therefore, they don't really come with the baggage of 4 hours worth of watching the show. So they just go, well, that was great, though, wasn't it?
Like, yeah. Of the actual practicalities. Yeah. And I guess, like, American time, it'd be interesting to hear from you all if how you watched it. Because for us, it was 4 p.m. through to 8:30. In America, I guess that would have been... 10-11, when a lot of people are at work. So yeah, I don't know if they would have watched it. Sterling Van, two people to defeat the Fiend when it's been a year from now. Volta can slap his mask off. I don't like that idea. Alistair can triple black mask the Fiend. Definitely Alistair Black.
Alistair Black versus the Fiend is a feud I want to see.
Hell Lord 247, can WWE rebuild the Fiend? Because I love him so much. Hopefully. Yeah. I think this is, but they had to do this, and they did it, so
yeah,
good.
I think this is the point in which you say, okay, like, because they clearly liked what Bray was doing as Firefly Funhouse Bray and the Fiend, and then they hotshotted him into the Universal title picture, but without wanting to actually put the belt on him. And I think if you ask Bray, maybe what he wanted was to have the belt.
Or not, let it. Yes.
So maybe. So this, at least, hopefully, here they go. Okay. Well, back to you. What do you want to do now? You're the Universal Champion.
But you'd hope. Sterling. Oh no. Gruz 777. I was getting ready to cancel my WWE subscription if Seth retained, but I was so happy when the Fiend won. WWE got lucky. LOL. So. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Subscriber numbers are down considerably. The Q3 reports came out on the day of the show, actually.
Did they?
Yeah, it's like there's the projection that WWE's network will drop under a million subscribers for the first time in December for a long, long time. That's a bad thing.
Well, this might be the boost they need.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that WWE got lucky. It's the fact that WWE has an army of fans going, well, that was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
So they just finally did the thing that they never do, which was listen to people.
Sterling Van again. Please do have in mind who you want to take the Fiend down, WWE. There's a year in advance that you have to build that person up for when it happens. Yeah. Yeah, you can't just have, I don't know...
Cedric.
Yeah. Akira Tozawa getting a one-week reign. Sterling Van again. That heel glove may be Bray's downfall later. I think, if he loses a match, it should be because...
He listened to the wrong glove.
It's his fault, not because he's been beaten. Sterling Van again. Two ways to beat the Fiend, 1 year from now. Oh, he's said the Volta chops off his mask thing.
Oh, maybe that was because of the first... Maybe that was on the first stream that went...
Sorry if you double super-chatted there. Prinesh Sharma, hope this is not like when Kane won the WWF title, lost it back the following night to Stone Cold.
Yeah, that you can't do that here.
Well, one way round that, maybe stop the plane from taking off.
Yeah, that's he's never going to show up again.
Though. Yeah, it's mine now.
Well, maybe they can do that. Maybe they can do the differentiation that, you know, the Fiend isn't Bray Wyatt. So if Bray Wyatt can't convince the Fiend to come out and defend the title, the title doesn't get defended.
I saw a great bit of fantasy.
Do you want to get? You want to bring him to the contract signing? Do you? Well, more fool you, sir.
On Reddit, someone said they can't wait for the Universal Title belt to turn up in puppet form in the Firefly Funhouse with its own voice and persona.
That'd be
good. Like sort of how Tommaso Ciampa's really, what do you call it?
Personified.
Personified the belt. Anthropomorphized when it's an animal.
I guess so.
Yeah. But yeah,
it's giving animals human characteristics.
Like how? Because I feel like the NXT title is a woman.
Is golden. Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's get on with the full show from top to bottom. Opened with a 20-man battle royal. The Saudis love a battle royal by the looks of things.
I think they like what they're given.
Or
they don't.
they see all these people. That's worth the money. Yeah. Quantity.
That's it.
This match was mostly based around Luke Harper and Eric Rowan staring at each other. It's like weirdly teasing like they were going to brawl or kiss.
Yeah.
And then taking out
everyone.
People who sort of got in their way.
I liked that moment. I thought that was like, it was quite a nice way to build it. Like, I wouldn't say the match was a particularly interesting battle royal, but I think this was the standout moment for me, was Harper and Rowan teaming up again. Luke Harper was massively over with the Saudi crowd. People were chanting his name. I liked the little moments they had where they were facing off and No Way Jose gets in the middle and they chuck him out and it's like, well, you're in the way of our brawl, make-out session, whatever it is. Then Tozawa tried the same and they got rid of him. That was like all fun stuff. And then it did become a bit of a slog when they were just eliminating everyone.
Well, I thought that's what they should have done from the start. There's never been any breakup between Harper and Rowan, so it was just very inconsistent for me for them to now be butting heads.
Yeah,
I surely, and especially in this sort of match, work together until the end. If you're that sort of relationship,
yeah,
and they, you know, the skip to the end, they're both working to eliminate Carrillo, and like, Harper chucks him out. Rowan turns away, like, well, that's done.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense, because now you have to deal with Harper if that's what you're doing. But Carrillo managed to eliminate them both and win. So I thought the Bludgeon Brothers looked stupid here.
Yeah. What, didn't one of them tip the other one out? Didn't Rowan tip Harper out?
I don't think so.
And then get... Because I think the point was that Harper was tipping Carrillo out, or whichever way round it was. Carrillo slips through the legs, and then the other one gets tipped out as well at the end.
I thought it was Carrillo that,
and then Carrillo comes back in and tips the final person out.
Well, maybe, yeah, because Harper went out first.
Yeah, so they are clearly building to conflict between Harper and Rowan there, but whether it gets paid off on from a pre-show.
After that, we had a weird bit where Paul Heyman's looking backstage for Brock Lesnar. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah, like he was Goldberg. Yeah. They're like knocking on for him.
And he opened the door, and Heyman just looks in and then goes to the camera.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that obviously set up Brock Lesnar opening the pay-per-view, just like he did at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So it opened with a bang. Cool way to start the show, but I think on retrospect, you save the big matches to the end.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the crowd. But, you know, do you want them to peak and trough, or do you want them to slowly raise up and up and up?
I think you want to do a peak and then a.
Okay.
Peak and then an up.
The go up to the roller coaster, up and then another.
Yeah, one. Exactly. Yeah. So bring it back. Go up first, bring it back down, and then build.
Lesnar and Velasquez open the show. What an amazing amount of pyro.
Yeah.
Like, the pyro and the set looked incredible.
Mm hmm.
Money. But yeah, interesting to open on this one.
Rey Mysterio comes out first with his arm in a sling. Then Cain Velasquez comes out with his plodding lucha music.
Mm-hmm.
And
the world's most generic lucha music. They got the little weird drum things in. Yeah.
And it was just 90 seconds of feeling each other out and the occasional little kick. And they'll clinch in the corner, which the referee didn't count. You know, usually when you get in the ropes of the corner, it's a five count and then you have to separate. I guess this was meant to recall an octagon match where you can push people up against the side of the cage forever. Yeah. But, you know, they never explained that. And then Kane hits a knee to the gut, hits a kick as Brock Lesnar to his head is falling back. He goes to mount Lesnar and finish him off. But Lesnar gets in the Kimura and makes him tap in 2 minutes, 2 seconds.
Yeah. I hated this. Absolutely. I just think it's, I don't know what you, I don't know why we built to this match. I don't know what they're going to do with Kane now, because he's obviously going to disappear and have this surgery. But he just looked like a goof. It was, you know, you've got a guy who, in the tail of the tape that they played multiple times in the kickoff show and before this match, big, bold lettering at the bottom right corner, beat Brock Lesnar in a UFC fight for the heavyweight title. So now we come to the wrestling world, and you've got the perfect excuse for Brock Lesnar to beat Cain Velasquez in the fact that Brock Lesnar is a wrestler in this scenario. He's obviously a legitimate MMA fighter as well, but in this scenario, he's a wrestler and Cain Velasquez is not. So, I don't know. Do Suplex City, do an F5, and then pin him and be like, well, Kane wasn't prepared for the wrestling side of things. He might be an MMA fighter. And also have it go longer, have it be closer. This just felt like, and obviously MMA fights end in this sort of way all the time, in a sort of like dramatic upset. It just didn't work for me here at all. Because it just makes you think, well, what was the point in making all this pomp and circumstance about Cain Velasquez coming to the company anyway? And then you know all the backstage stuff of like, well, he signed a 3-year deal and now he looks like an idiot.
It's almost like he's punished for
having a career outside of the company.
Yeah, and being silly enough to love wrestling and commit his long-term future to this company. It's like, ugh, you mark.
But also, like, so he's going to go and have surgery and then he's got to have a return at some point. Mm. And when he returns, people are just going to go, ugh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, and he's capable of doing some quite cool stuff that maybe Brock Lesnar isn't equipped to take, like hurricanranas and all that kind of stuff. Maybe Brock Lesnar isn't going to be very good at selling that, so they didn't do it. But that would have been a better angle of like, they step into this world and then they do a bit of wrestling stuff to start off. And then you go into the sort of, it breaks down into an MMA fight and you can go, it's breaking down, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes
just
into
a slugfest, kicks and...
I don't know, some way of doing it that it transitions into a wrestling match, starting as a sort of striking match. I don't know, but the way they told the story, saying that Kane is a striking expert and he's not submission-based or a wrestler, blah, 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 didn't land for me, because the match that they were having until the moment that Kane put himself in the position to get put in a Kimura was a striking match. So Kane lost at the match type that they said he was good at.
Yeah.
And so he's not a wrestler or a submissions specialist, nor is he a particularly good striker, apparently.
He's a lot of people have said in the way that they like this match is, oh, but it's a realistic MMA fight.
Yes, it is.
And sure. Okay, if you want to do a realistic MMA fight, you can do those. But let's just look at this from how good the wrestlers look afterwards. Brock Lesnar looks pretty good. I mean, it's not like he can get any bigger, really.
Yeah.
Kane looks terrible.
Yeah.
He's stepped in. This is his debut. He gets hardly anything. He taps out, which is, I get an MMA finish and a legitimate one. But in wrestling, traditionally, that says you quit. Yeah, you're not a tough guy. And it just makes it puts all the good heat on Brock Lesnar. And this guy who wasn't connecting with the crowd anyway, I always thought, he's not had the best start. Everyone thought he was Dominic when he came in first. He's not really gotten over in promos. It's been Rey Mysterio who's had all of that shine. Yeah. But when he gets in the ring, he'll show he's a legitimate tough guy. And he can get over a tough guy character and connect with the crowd that way. But they completely buried him.
Yeah.
This was a burial. Like, even afterwards, Rey Mysterio gets in. Like, Brock's not letting go of the Kimura hold. Rey Mysterio gets in with a chair, starts wailing on Brock. Brock beats up Rey. then just picks up Cain Velasquez as if he hadn't had enough burying already, and hits the F5 onto a chair, and then Rey Mysterio saves him. And you're like, but wait a second. The dynamic was that Kane's the tough guy that's come in to help Rey?
Yeah, injured Rey is being helped by Kane. And now it turns out that it was all a Rey Mysterio build. Like,
and I want to say, I've always said, like, the this is a really good Mysterio versus Lesnar feud.
Yeah.
With Kane sort of as a second. But yeah, they've done it wrong. I wasn't a fan of this at all. And also, Mysterio's on Raw, Lesnar's on SmackDown.
Yeah,
brand split. It just...
I mean, it's another possibility that I'm excited for going forward. But the way they've got to it is terrible and a waste of the Fox debut on SmackDown. All the storytelling they've done in the build-up to have a 2-minute match, and to sacrifice Kofi Kingston to as well. Like, there's so much damage that's been done just so Brock can do a Kimura.
Well, on to Kofi Kingston. Yeah. We got the tag team turmoil match after this. I'm not going to do the full name, which we started late.
Yeah.
and just to run through, Lucha House Party got beaten by Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. Lince Dorado was dressed as Pennywise. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Gran Metalik was dressed as Pentagon Jr.
Yes, he was.
There's a huge trophy at ringside. Hawkins and Ryder come down next. They're beaten. Heavy Machinery eliminate Roode and Ziggler. Then the New Day come down. New Day are over huge. Mm-hmm. Otis was over huge as well, because he just did his sexy body stuff.
People just liked the comedy of that, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, people were chanting, this is awesome, if people could string together more than four moves. So.
The New Day beat them. B-Team out. New Day beat them. Revival come out. New Day beat them. OC come out. And OC beat Kofi.
Yeah. So, but Revival, after losing, got back in the ring and they beat down the New Day, setting them up for the fall with the OC.
Yeah. Revival are meant to be facing the New Day for the tag titles tonight on SmackDown. We'll see if the talent can get back from Saudi Arabia in time. There's been some travel issues. But yeah, Kofi took the pin last Friday in a roll-up nothing finish. And then he took the pin here. And it's just like, look, you have to beat the New Day, okay. Don't keep beating Kofi.
Yeah.
It just... There's
not even Xavier around to share it out, is it? It's not...
There's all this great work that you did. You honestly made a new main event star in 2019 from a guy who's been in the company for over 15 years. And now it feels like you're doing everything you can to undo all the good work you did.
Mm-hmm.
The OC then took on the Viking Raiders and beat the Viking Raiders, Raw Tag Team Champions, and they won. Yeah.
It was a strange match, because we were doing all the sort of research for, like, what even is a tag team turmoil match in WWE terms? What's the rules? And they were saying it was like a four corners match.
Yeah.
Initially, in which you can tag in anyone. The kind of WWE four corners match where you can tag in two people are in the ring and you can tag in anyone. And then it ended up actually just being a gauntlet match, right?
So, yeah.
And it just meant that it just felt long, because every single match actually had quite a lot of time. This went like 30 minutes almost, I think, overall.
Yeah, again, it's that just put on a really fun house show.
Yeah. It should, like, and I think the four corners thing would have worked if you'd just done a sort of four corners tornado style match where it's just all big spots. Even bits of this match that you were like, oh, I actually would really like to see the Viking Raiders and the OC in the ring together. Even that was a lot of kind of trying to hit the big moves and them countering, magic killer, we win. Oh, okay. And nothing ever really started, like, gelled properly. I was actually the most excited for this match when the Lucha House Party were in the ring.
Yeah.
And doing all of their stuff. And you're going like, well, these guys are just ridiculously underused, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just felt like the structuring of this had some good story elements in the middle when New Day came out, who were really over. And then it was a bit of a flub when they got eliminated. And then it lost all momentum from there. And you could have kept all of that momentum by just having more teams in the ring, bit more spotty, bit more fun, and a little less psychology. Because there was a lot of hot tag psychology in this match specifically.
And if you're looking to build this Revival New Day match for the tag titles, I would argue New Day winning and then going on to fight for the titles is a bigger sell for that match than the New Day beating the Revival. even though the New Day had already gone through two other teams, and then the New Day getting beaten to set up that match. You know, it's backwards. Rey Mysterio has a promo with Byron Saxton backstage, and he says some Spanish stuff against Brock Lesnar. So it seems like they are building a match. Then we got, easily, the best match of the night by quite some way, Mansoor versus Cesaro. It was excellent.
I think this was the first thing, like, beyond entrances that really connected with the crowd. Like, I think everyone was popping really big for... People popped massively for Brock Lesnar coming out. They were, like, quite excited when he was in the ring, and then that went over... That just finished so quickly that people just went, okay. The tag team turmoil match went too long. So then this was the first time that you were like, oh, okay, this is what it's like when they're actually, like, really engaged with what's happening in the ring. And it was great.
Amazing.
I think Mansoor played it up perfectly. He's got really good facial expressions. Played to the crowd amazingly as well. He's, like, very good at just, like, getting people riled up and, like, pausing during his promos and stuff to get them to cheer at the right time.
He's like a babyface Seth Rollins.
He is, yeah, like a proper one. And then Cesaro, I think, was so good in this match. Like, he just led it perfectly. It was such a well-structured match. There was just the right amount of Cesaro being on top and sort of playing with Mansoor to get people sort of willing him into a comeback. And then the comeback was timed perfectly. Then there was all the counters by Cesaro and all these huge moves and very, very close pinfalls
that
just made people go crazy every time Mansoor kicked out of it. I just think it was really fun.
Yeah, it was simple. It wasn't overthought. It had the right result of the, you know, you really want to put the hometown person over because they're going to get a naturally bigger reaction.
Yeah.
It just shows, like, you should do that maybe in the United States too.
Yeah.
And you might get bigger baby faces out of it.
And it's just one of those things where it's like, it just says that Mansoor clearly, by sheer virtue of the amount of people there, he's ready for a bigger stage than he's being given, which is NXT live events. So put him on NXT TV. Do something with him, because you can start to drag in all the people who watch, you know, everyone. You're pitching Crown Jewel to people on SmackDown and Raw anyway. So why wasn't he on SmackDown or Raw or something before Crown Jewel to make you feel like this match actually had stakes? Instead, it was just hometown hero versus Cesaro. So you literally know that this is just pandering.
Mm.
You could at least try and hide the pandering. I don't know.
He cut a really nice promo afterwards that was a bit scripted, but then he got to speak in Saudi or whatever the language
Arabic.
Is, Arabic. And that seemed a lot more emotional, and the crowd loved it. So a bit long on the promo, but overall, really, really good. This was by far the best complete segment on the entire pay-per-view, by a long way.
And I do also think it just goes to show that if you are just doing the pandering stuff and it's fun, it works.
Yes,
so
yeah, totally.
What, like, I didn't, like, this was my favourite match on the show, and also the one that was most obviously dedicated to the Saudi audience.
Mm.
So why does everything else fall flat? I don't understand why everything else is rubbish.
Byron Saxton backstage with Seth Rollins. He talks about The Fiend. He's unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to burn it down. Then we got Braun Strowman versus Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury, excellent entrance. Braun Strowman just walks down, his usual stuff. Tyson Fury, loads of pyro. The Isley Brothers, it's your thing. Like that. He comes out. He's in the full Saudi get-up as well.
Does the Rey Mysterio entrance as well. He pops up
from here. He pops up. And that the crowd love him because he's dressed in their local attire. He's a total babyface here. And I'm like, who are we cheering for? What was the thing? And it was an absolutely brilliant entrance. Michael Cole says vintage Fury.
Yeah.
His debut match in WWE, but whatever. And then Fury gets in the ring, and that's where it kind of stops getting interesting.
Yeah.
Fury is not a wrestler. That's not his fault. He's a very successful boxer. I wouldn't expect him to also be an amazing wrestler. Braun Strowman.
Quite different disciplines if you consider the fact that wrestling involves a lot of using your hands to put people in holds, and boxing involves putting your hands in gloves that mean you can't use your hands.
And actually trying to hurt people versus on purposely not trying to hurt people.
Yeah, there's that one
too.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
And Braun Strowman I like Braun Strowman a lot, but he's not. He's a limited wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
So you're stuck here with a very limited wrestler and someone who literally can't wrestle.
Yeah.
And who seems to have done about 2 weeks of rehearsing the match in the performance center. And while that can work for Ronda Rousey, who had a lot longer than 2 weeks, she had like 4 months and, you know, a lot of training before then as well, it didn't work here.
And but also Ronda Rousey's martial arts lend themselves to wrestling, like judo and stuff.
And that's
that fit much better than boxing.
She worked that into her style. She fought like an MMA fighter. Fury worked like a wrestler here. Book him like a boxer.
Yeah.
Like they kept on doing lockups. They did the sort of, and this is like, you know, the first second sequence you learn if you go to a wrestling training course, because it's so easy to do, but it looks good. And that is the lockup. You do the sort of reversal thing, and then you go down on the ground, you roll through, and you kip up. And it's so easy to do because the other guy just picks you up. But it looks good. They did that spot. I can do that spot.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. Fury couldn't roll, and then he couldn't kip up properly either. And that, like, again, I don't want it to sound like I'm being down on Fury.
No.
I'm being down on how they book this match to almost expose every limitation that Fury has.
And Braun,
yeah.
Like, what you needed Fury to go in there with is someone who's an amazing seller.
Yes.
And yeah. you go, someone who is kind of over as unstoppable, but can sell up a storm. And then you just have Fury. Like, it should have been Tyson Fury versus the OC.
Mm.
And then you do...
AJ Styles could have got a 5-star match out of
this. But you know what I mean? You do that and he, like, knocks out Anderson. He knocks out AJ. And then he stood there with Gallows, someone the same size as him. And Gallows would just sell that amazingly. The thing about Braun is he's like... The impressive thing about beating down Braun is the sheer size of Braun. So like when you pick Braun up and you slam him about, everyone goes, whoa, that's crazy. But Braun never really does more selling than that of being like, well, my body went through that, didn't it? It doesn't really do many facials or bounce around the flop or anything. So here, everything felt a bit clunky, even that big knockout punch that Tyson hits.
Yeah, it was a very sloppy match. Tyson did his Undertaker setup spot that he did in the Deontay Wilder fight, which, you know, I didn't work for me. But yeah, the finish came when Strowman's trying to get back in the ring. Fury whacks him on the chin. Strowman just falls out and is knocked out. The referee does a 10 count. Strowman can't get back in. So it's a count out victory that Michael Cole called a TKO.
Yeah.
But it's gone down in the record books as a count out victory.
A count out victory. Victory's a victory. Win's a win.
So it's nice when the commentators don't know the actual rules of the thing.
And Braun, like, jelly legged his way around for a good 4 of the seconds.
That was good selling, actually.
I never
just said, oh, I liked it.
4 seconds worth? No way! It's like he could have got back in the ring 3 times there. Yeah. Like, the only reason, like, he literally at one point was stood at the apron and he was just like, whoa, my legs are too wobbly. It's like, just stay down for like, stay down till 8 and then get up.
Yeah.
And then wobble and then fall down again and then get counting out for 10. Make it look like the really close, I'm going to roll in at 9 spot and don't do that.
Mm. And after that, Fury is celebrating. Strowman gets in and power slams him and says, this is my ring, you piece of crap. So. Usually when you bring in sports stars from outside wrestling, you want to use them to enhance current stars. So Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Perfect example. Tyson never fought a match. I think whenever you put people in matches, it seems like a good freak show attraction, but it never actually works.
No.
It's better if, you know, like Muhammad Ali in the WrestleMania first main event. So it's sort of that enforcer spot at ringside they can be perfect for because you can hide their limitations. In this, again, I always try and judge stuff by how over everyone is afterwards. I didn't feel like Fury looked good. And no. I don't think Strowman looks better coming out of this either.
No.
So that's a fail. That's a down.
But Fury did make 12 million, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
He won.
Win's a win.
Then R-Truth has some 24/7 title shenanigans backstage.
Which I liked.
He won the title back in the 20-man battle royal on the pre-show. We didn't mention that, did we?
No, from Sunil Singh.
Yeah, and then he lost it to Samir here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought this was quite funny, though, because he was talking about being the 24/7, 48, 2011, whatever champion. And then he was like, you need to have an escape plan. And then just ran into a door and fell over.
That was funny.
And then Samir won it.
But I'm a bit over all the... God, I sound cynical. I'm sorry if I'm coming off as cynical.
The 24/7 title, you're over it.
Yeah.
The roll-up title champion.
I was over
it. We should have a roll-up championship on WrestleTalk, I think.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
AJ Styles then took on Humberto Carrillo. The OC came out with AJ with this giant trophy that they've got, which was funny. AJ got a huge pop for his entrance. Earlier in the Battle Royal, he was just shown on screen watching, and the place erupted, didn't it?
Yeah.
So he's over. Unfortunately, Carrillo is great. He's got fantastic dimples, but he's not over.
No.
He's not even over in the United States yet.
No.
And to put him in front of this audience was a big mistake. You're right. They should have just made it a special attraction match.
Yeah. I don't think enough was done to really use him to the best of his ability. Like he did a lot of his big spots, like his huge springboard arm drag thing where he jumps really high and a bunch of that stuff. But I don't know, like unless you're Ricochet and you're doing crazy counters and stuff, I don't necessarily think you're just going to drag in people who don't know who you are at this stage.
Yeah.
And people weren't into the story of him winning the Battle Royal and then being in this match clearly, because they actually... It seemed like people here just wanted whoever they knew to win the match, regardless of heel, face, whatever the story was. It was just, you know, people wanted Brock Lesnar to win that match against Cain Velasquez because they knew who Brock Lesnar was.
Mm. Yeah, totally. And yeah, the crowd were completely quiet. Like, I would say they were pretty quiet for the whole show. They were silent here.
Mm.
And it didn't work. It doesn't even work for us as viewers of the weekly product, because AJ beat Carrillo on Monday definitively.
So yeah, it's just one of those ones where it's like it was a well worked match that had all the things that you would be like, this, that's normally exciting, but there were no stakes here because there's no way in hell Humberto Carrillo's walking out as the US champion, and they didn't even tease that he got close in the match. So most of his offense put him in danger.
It felt very Cedric Alexander-like. When AJ just beat Cedric Alexander twice within a week period, very definitively in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's just what's happened to Carrillo. Hulk Hogan had a promo backstage with Byron Saxton, and he said, "Let me tell you something, brother." And then he corrected himself and then called him Beautiful Byron.
Mm.
Apparently this is a thing they're going to try and do. Like Mean Gene Okerlund.
Beautiful,
it's going to be Beautiful Byron Saxton.
So BB. Let me tell you something, BB.
BB. So
that's awful.
He also said that Team Hogan had been hanging and banging.
Yeah. Hanging and banging. I've been inside all these guys.
Right.
We're closer than brothers.
It's awkward time. It's Natalia versus Lacey Evans. Let's get the obligatory historic mentions out the way first. This was the first time women have ever wrestled in Saudi Arabia. The crowd were very much into it. Not everyone, but the majority were. At the end of the match, the production team focused on every single woman in the audience, it felt like, and they seemed very, very happy, and they hugged Natalia, and they hugged Lacey, and that was genuinely quite emotionally affecting.
Yeah.
Okay, we've said all that. This made me enormously uncomfortable. I didn't like it. Natalia, when she made her entrance, not only was she covered in head to toe, which is fine, you know, that's the way it has to be. Those are the social customs. She also had this massive T-shirt on that just made it look so pandering. It made me feel uncomfortable. And then someone threw a water bottle at her, which made me feel more uncomfortable. Lacey Evans was similarly dressed. And then they had a match in the ring that was very stagey, that they would stop and sort of do this. This was the only taunt they could do. They were smiling all the time. And it was never a real match. It was just this is great, isn't it? This is historic, which it is. But they wrestled at half speed. It was a very slow, uninteresting match.
And it was like, and it felt like every time that Natalia did the taunt, it was more of a sort of, I'm just checking this is still okay.
Yeah.
Rather than a, let's all cheer now because I did something. You know, it's not like a, whoa, something cool happened. It was like, is this okay, guys?
Still with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So I don't really have much to say on it more than that. Natalia won with a sharpshooter. Lacey tapped. Other than it's happened. We're never going to hear the end of it. It is a historic moment. Done for cynical reasons.
Yeah, it's a historical moment by definition of having never happened before.
That's, yeah.
Plenty of stuff has never happened before.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I didn't realise how uncomfortable it would make me when I was watching it. And, yeah, it's kind of like, it highlighted to me how this shouldn't have to be a thing.
Yeah.
More than me getting caught up in the...
Well, it's difficult. It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's a big PR spin of something that WWE. You know, I think we all take for granted that you see women wrestlers now, but WWE, even in its recent history, is overlooked and underused. So they've made a big PR thing out of just featuring women more and giving them their sort of due for how good they've been for years and not been featured. And now this, while being pitched in the same month as Evolution was last year, which was a very big deal for women's wrestling.
Yeah.
This is now being pitched as something like that tops that almost. I don't know. And it just feels like it's one of those things where you don't want to deny people in Saudi Arabia the option to see female wrestlers. And that is a massive deal for them. But I guess as an outside viewer and being shown it and being told how important and historic it is, it does just expose the fact that maybe we shouldn't be making a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
Because it is a little bit backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is what it is, folks. So after that, however, straight into what this entire show should have been. So the Mansoor and Cesaro match, I think this was the second best executed match for the concept of the show.
Yeah.
Team Hogan versus Team Flair. Yeah, it was just a whole load of fun.
This could have been the whole show. Do you know what? The whole show could have been, we've got some legends who have had long-term rivalries, and they're not wrestling, but they have picked surrogate wrestlers.
Yeah.
So they're going to come out, and they're going to go, this is my guy, and I'm going to, you know, I'm backing him, and I'm in his corner. And you could have just done that for five matches, and then just thrown a couple of other matches together of, like, really big stars against other really big stars. Not for any titles, not for any stakes, just for fun. That would have been a fine show.
Yeah.
Because this match was probably, after the Mansoor match, the most fun.
Yeah, as an actual viewing experience, definitely.
And it was slow early on when it was the heels working over Ricochet and Ali for quite a bit because they were the small guys on their team. And then once everyone started tagging in, hitting their finishers, it became a lot of fun in the final stretch.
Yeah. And Rusev, despite how rubbish that storyline's been on Raw,
oh yeah,
it felt really fiery when he got in the ring and had a showdown with Bobby
Lashley.
Because
Lana came out, right? Yeah. So Lana comes out on Bobby Lashley's entrance in like a full sequency, like
curtain
gown,
giant poncho.
It was a massive outfit. It was gigantic. And then like Lashley comes down to the ring, and the whole match was weirdly structured around Rusev and Lashley facing off.
Yeah,
which I really liked. And obviously, you knew it was going to break down to Roman Reigns getting the win, and then Hogan giving him the rub and all that stuff. But yeah, it was really the who's rubbing Lana that was the main point of the match, which I really liked. And actually, it makes that feel like it might have been for something.
Yeah.
As ridiculous as the second cuck storyline of the year might be, it did actually make for a really fun match of like Rusev is clearly like he's got no Fs to give anymore and is having quite a lot of fun in his role now.
Yeah.
He's gone like, well, this is I'll make the best of the bad situation and just oversell this and really play it up. And you know what? It worked perfectly. I love the bit at the end as well when they're all lining up. So when all the Team Hogan are lining up and they're all raising hands, Rusev gets left out of that. So he just sticks his head between everyone's torsos. So he goes, yay!
Team Hogan, baby!
Yeah.
He's definitely given up and he's just having fun with him. Like,
I love it.
Yeah. It's really refreshing to see him sort of released from any pressure in his own head.
But he's always like, it's weird because I've seen Rusev on Total Divas and stuff before, and he's very charismatic in real life, and he's really funny. And it's weird that he's always given such a serious character, beyond the Rusev Day stuff, obviously.
I just want to give a shout out to the final sequence, which was Ali did that RKO counter spot where he hand springs out of it,
yeah,
which is just insane. And then immediately off of that, Ricochet hit a shooting star on Randy Orton. Chad Gable jumps out off the apron onto Drew. I think there's some dives to take out everyone else. And then Roman hits the spear. It's a really, really fun match. I liked it a lot. And then we got the Fiend versus Rollins thing, which was the main event, which we've already talked about. I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. I'd give it a low 2.
Low 2.
I think there were a lot of duds in this show. There was Kane and Brock was a dud. Fury and Braun was a dud. The most exciting, I think, like, I wouldn't say AJ and Umberto was a dud, but it just didn't really get any pulses racing or do anything.
No.
And then, yeah, Hogan Flair was pretty damn good. The tag match was quite boring. I don't know. So much of it was just like, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's get on with your super chats. Priyansh Sharma says, remember Bray's custom universal title? I've just got it up here. It's, yeah. It's okay. It's got a lot of birds on. Buzzards.
Well, change those plates.
Yeah.
Change them to rabbits or fiends.
Yeah, like little cuddly toys.
Yeah, yeah.
Pavi let Andy out of his cage. I know why I hate the ending to Fiend versus Seth. It's not because it's the actual ending, but because it was in Crown Jewel. Yeah, it's unfortunate that we'll have to look at a Saudi show as something this momentous. But it was on Halloween, which is perfect.
So yeah.
Maybe think of it that way. Game Fanatic, Bray should have a cardboard belt in the funhouse. That'll make it look a bit too
rent. He could have an arts and crafts belt maybe that he's made.
On Crown Jewel and Saudi Arabia in general, Bobo Jacobo, I really, really, really hope the talent is okay. That's probably off the stuff that they're having trouble getting transport back to the US.
Mm-hmm.
Oblivious Carry, Rollins' neck break cell was amazing.
That was very cool. And you said that should be his finish.
I think it's amazing. It's such a good finish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quoth the Raven, 79. Why red light versus Seth, but no red light versus Finn?
Because they hadn't decided that the red light existed yet.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think you keep saying that I like the red light. I don't like the red light. I like the idea more of the match being harder to see, in the sense that I don't think the Fiend should be stood in daylight. I think it's like the Batman thing. You don't, like, Batman in the middle of the day looks a bit stupid. Batman at night is wicked.
Because your imagination fills in the blanks, and that will always be more terrifying.
Yeah, I think the fiend in the ring, in full lighting, even in the Finn match, I was a bit like, well, it's just Bray Wyatt in a mask, isn't it? And you can make it more of a monster by having the lights out slightly. And I don't think the red light is the solution. I think some more dramatic lighting setup, a bit more spotlighting, a bit darker, might be the thing. But that obviously takes a lot more rigging.
Will Adams, Luke Owen's number one fan, despite all the controversy with Saudi Arabia, that Mansoor promo was heartwarming to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that knocked it out the park. AMAC is what... £2.99 is what Tyson Fury should have been paid. That's what they've super chatted in. Mike Depew, more like Crown Jewel, am I right? Laurie Blakador? Crown Jewel? J-U-U-L? Aren't they the name of a vaping company?
Maybe.
Sterling Van, hold on. Rollins was defeated after some sparks to the face. Dean Ambrose suffered the same fate at TLC 2014. Do they know it made Dean look bad? Do you remember that? Dean had a monitor, and I think it was in a match with Bray Wyatt as well.
Mm.
And he wasn't connected to anything. And he's going to hit Bray with it, but it explodes in his face. Terrible finish. I thought Rollins looked pretty good, though. I like the idea of being blinded, and I thought that worked well.
Yeah.
Gazzatola of Rock and Roller. The Saudi shows I've seen were really dull, so I won't bother with Crown Jewel. House shows are only good when you're there. This is why I'm taking my son to his first WWE event in Brighton next week.
Oh, that's wicked. I think house shows can be really fun, and I think they could have just gone. The majority of our audience don't care.
Mm.
So just play with it.
Yeah. Mansoor's creepy stare versus Undertaker eye pop guy.
Mm.
Was that when he was in the corner and he was like pumping himself up? I liked Mansoor. Firefly fan house, Edna Madden. I love Crown Jewel. All in capitals.
Mm.
Nate dropped surname. We said the exact same things after last year's Crown Jewel. Like, okay, it's over now. They can get on with the real stories. But then stalled for Survivor Series and botched things up even further. Like when SmackDown didn't win a single match.
Oh, yeah. SmackDown will win all the matches this year, though, so that's fine.
Well, NXT's there to take all the losses.
That's balance.
Long-term book here. Lily Smith. The women's match. It doesn't pay to be the first to do something if you're not going to present top-tier quality product to your audience. I would have felt differently about it if it was Becky Lynch and Charlotte having a decent match.
A really good match.
Yeah.
I think that's what I was saying yesterday. Is that I just think it's... If you're going to go out there and do a women's match and you're doing it for the purposes and you're dressing it up as the being at the forefront of change and doing it for progress... Put on a match that actually makes people go, wow, women can really do this. Like, oh, yeah, women can do this. Like,
that is noticeably worse than the men's matches.
Yeah.
My laptop's just died.
Has it?
Yeah.
Well,
we've got loads of super chats. Fill for time.
Can I get them up on my phone? Is that a thing I can do?
Have you got Discord on your phone?
Might be able to, yeah. Oh, I do have Discord on my phone, yeah.
Yeah, so go into the channel mods. And then there's a link to a Google Drive.
Do you want to do it? Oh, my God. Yeah, I've got WhatsApp notifications out. Or channel mods. Wait. This one.
Top quality content.
There you go, look.
Hey. Cheers, mate. Where did we get to? We got to... Do you want me to close all these tabs down?
No, I need those for later. I'm halfway through watching some stuff.
The women's match, yep. James Williams. So Lacey's move is the women's right, and she lost.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a meta commentary there by the booking team.
Mm-hmm.
O to the B. Fair F's to Fury. Fair F's? Oh, fair...
Yeah, fair F's. That makes sense.
Is that a saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Attempted moves and took bumps.
Yeah.
A for effort.
Yeah, no, I'd give him an A for effort. I wouldn't take anything away from him for like... It also takes balls to probably know that you're not amazing at it and get in the ring and do it anyway as well.
Yeah, again, we're not criticising Fury. We're criticising the way he was booked. Pavi let Andy out of his cage again. WWE has portrayed every event in Saudi as a side story compared to the main story, making the audience not care about the results in Saudi. And now The Fiend wins. Do they expect us to care? That's one of the major problems with The Fiend winning here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Santiago, red room definition is the reason for red lights. So the murder, red rum. It's a shining reference. On Survivor Series, Sparks. So in Survivor Series, we have Lesnar versus Fiend versus Cole. This is if we're going, it's champion versus champion.
Yeah.
That's a match.
And Cole's going to die.
Yeah, like Lesnar's one side, The Fiend's on the other, Adam Cole's in the middle.
Me! No, I'm leaving. Goodbye.
And also Lynch versus Baszler versus Bayley. Do I smell a four horsewomen versus four horsewomen match for the near future?
Ooh. I'd love, because this is the thing, because Survivor Series is obviously the same weekend as War Games. Yeah. So if they are doing champion versus champion versus champion, all the NXT people are pulling double shift.
Mm. John Kurosawa, Lesnar wins Universal and NXT titles at Survivor Series. They're not usually for the titles, but that's not.
We can't rule it out.
Yeah. Vinay Ramachandran. So are all Survivor Series matches going to be triple threat matches? Raw versus NXT versus SmackDown? It will feel like that stupid pay-per-view Fatal 4-Way. That was a stupid pay-per-view. I don't know. They haven't really talked about it. I guess we'll find out more on SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, I guess I imagine limited matches are going to be involving NXT at all.
Yeah.
Because they've got their big show the night before.
Priyank Vasani. Will we see champ versus champ, Brock versus Fiend in the next pay-per-view in Survivor Series? Love you guys from India. Love you too. I don't know how NXT will factor. So. Yeah.
And I also don't, if you thought booking The Fiend against Rollins was a mind death, then what are they going to do against Brock, who seemingly can beat up even people he's been beaten up by in real life now?
Bobo Jacobo. Theory, Ray takes the title off Brock via Kane interference before Survivor Series to bring a top title to Raw. Then it's Ray versus Fiend versus Cole.
I like the idea, if we're building up to the idea that Rey Mysterio is going to retire soon, which I think a lot of this has been about anyway, bringing Dominic in and Kane now, then a final run as WWE champion feels like a very fitting way to let Rey Mysterio go out. So I'd love that. I think, I would absolutely love that.
On the subject of WWE, quoth the Raven 79, odds of Rey defeating Brock and bring the belt to Raw? So there's a lot of this sort of stuff. I don't think so. I think pretty low. Nate drops surname. The McMahon, you're the authority promo came next. After Survivor Series. Mm. Yeah, that was off of the back of that. Fergal McClements, has Seth's awful run as the main company man made anyone else appreciate how well Roman handled it? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he got all those boos and he just stood there and he took it and was professional. And you compare how Seth's with nowhere near as many boos.
No. Seth was very over until the Fiend thing, and he was blowing up at people on Twitter before that. So.
Yeah, that whole Becky Seth stuff didn't it was a bad story to book him in. Sterling Van, I could be wrong, but I don't think Fox cares about tag teams. The Revival is still an afterthought, and you would think they'd want a SmackDown team winning if they did care. Just an observation. I think it's WWE that doesn't care about tag teams. Vince McMahon specifically. Flint Mech, will SmackDown be all mixed match challenge tonight? Will we get an Evolution show after all? NXT Invasion, now's our chance.
I think NXT Invasion is probably a very good shout. I mean, there's still some people left around.
Apparently 12 wrestlers got out on the first flight.
Yeah.
So...
But it depends if they're going to make it back in time still, because it's a long, long flight and they had very limited time to get there, land and get to the venue. So I don't know. I feel like now would be the time to do a weird NXT Invasion angle just to build a Survivor Series.
Yeah, it fits.
Yeah,
you kind of want the main roster stars to be invaded, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Adrian Wells, Kofi might be turning heel. Not before Big E, mate.
Mm.
Jeffrey Garrow, first super chat, having good time with the boys. Could Ray's build be to move WWE champ belt to Raw as Fiend has taken Universal title to SmackDown? I don't think so. I don't know what's going to happen.
I'm hopeful.
Miscellaneous section, total blurred. Haven't watched any WWE products since Hell in a Cell and that Kofi run broke me. Fully watching AEW thanks to the content you put out. Oh, glad to spread the word. Tim Arndt.
That's doing me.
Laurie, I heard that you're keen to play Luigi's Mansion 3.
Oh, yeah.
I bought it yesterday and am now on the final floor. It's been really good so far.
You've powered through that. I heard that was 17 hours long.
Is
that
it really?
Game. Yeah.
Whoa.
Tim Arndt.
Forged by Gaming, Oli versus El Fagador in the first empty stream match. A reference to our... technical difficulties earlier. Omega Ranga Ramble.
Idiocy.
Did you let the pizza guy go home last night after making him wait outside for so long?
No, we kept him. We locked him in the office.
Yeah.
He died.
Firefly Fanhouse, Edna Madden. This is the best day of my life. Maybe because of the Fiend.
I'm going to say, got Firefly in the name, so maybe.
Oh, yeah. Robert Banker. So does Andy win Wrestle League for 8 stomps? He predicted it.
Yeah.
He gets 1 point. Extra than us. Jeffrey Pridemore, yesterday was a great day to work late. Didn't get home till 5 p.m, 30 minutes after the show ended. Only had to watch the last 5 minutes. Just a few more. SM Kicks, off topic, idea for AEW NXT grading scales. Meltzer Stars, All Elite, Crossroads, TN Terrible, What the Buck, we've already got What the Buck, Undisputed, Nextalent, US average, full fail's good.
Full fail's good.
A Walter Chop. Substance 103K, love you guys, thank you very much. I quite like the current ratings scores, but full fail's good.
Hmm.
Ribbon Ribbonton, should have listened to the PowerPoint. Yeah, Drew Gulak's. And finally, Monday, just to give everyone something to think about, today is the only day of the year that technically occurs twice a year. 1-11-19. Cheers, mates. Love you all. So, it's the 1st of September, but it's also the 11th of January. From a numbers perspective.
Madness.
What knowledge to end on.
There you go. There you You've been dropped with knowledge.
You turn my phone into black and white.
It's just a skill I have. I just optimised your phone experience there.
Well, I'm just going to leave it there now because you've made it look really bland.
Thank you all so much for joining
Who
us here.
Who does that?
On this. I just pressed
Who
the button.
Does that?
I don't know. Why have you got that as a shortcut on a button?
I don't have it as a shortcut on a button.
I pressed.
You went into a menu and you did that.
I pressed the button
who,
where my
who
power button is.
Who does that to somebody else's phone? That's like
I was
if
trying
I
to close
showed
it.
You something on my Instagram, you started liking pictures.
That's next.
Outrageous.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.